Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, everybody. This is Renee. Welcome back to Renee's Heart to Heart. Well, today is a very, very solemn day. Today is the anniversary of 911. And I was reflecting a little bit this morning about where I was. That was the first year that I started working at Hippocrates Health Institute. And I was holding a manager's meeting. And we, of course, have cell phones shut off. Everybody was immersed in the meeting. And I walked out of the meeting afterwards, which was, I think, 9 o'clock. And my daughter called me to tell me some airplanes had flown in to the World Trade Center. And I said, oh, somebody must be messing with us. That can't be. I really, really, really didn't believe it the first time it was said to me. Why? Because I grew up in a time when, even though I knew that there was turmoil and war and fighting all over, I mean, I was a young woman during the Vietnam War, and I realized that kind of thing was going on all over the world, but I never, ever believed. You can call it naive, stupid, you can call it whatever you want to. I didn't believe that anybody would ever cross over the lines of the United States of America and start a war. Mind you, I knew about Pearl Harbor, and I knew about all that kind of stuff, but I still felt safe. Now, you can call that whatever you want to. Like I said, naive, stupid, head in the clouds, whatever. I did think we were safe. I believed it. I believed there would always be war in third world countries where people, for whatever reasons, seem to lack a little bit of the respect that is needed for life. I'm not critiquing that. I've met many people from third world countries. I've loved them all. I don't have any, I'm not harboring any resentment towards anybody other than the people, the terrorists, the people that grow up believing that the power is so great that they will do anything to be the king of the hill. That's what bothers me. But again, when this happened 13 years ago, I was shocked and really, really in disbelief. So let's bring Shelley in. I'm going to go over some stuff that I found today to kind of give us another outline. Even though I know we've all heard it 100 times, it does get a little bit convoluted. So I found a good site so that we can talk a little bit about what really happened that day and some of the numbers and respectfully, have a little bit of regard for the people who are probably still suffering the loss of loved ones. Good morning, Shel. How are you?
Oh, sorry about that. I had my phone on mute.
Moot. It's moot.
I had my phone on mute. So, yeah, good morning, sweetie. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Doing good. Yeah, 9/11 is always kind of a somber day when you kind of remember what it ties into. My difficulty with going over the statistics is because I'm not going to get into all the details, but I don't believe that it was completely a terrorist attack. I do believe that there were corrupt people within our own government that assisted in that. And that's one of the reasons why we really are pretty safe in the United States, except when it comes to corruption. And there's people within our own country that assist outside forces to perpetrate tragedies. And sometimes it's done within our own four walls, so to speak. There's a great many people in government that have a lot of wealth, that have amassed wealth and power, and that are very corrupt because of it. And there are a great many people in politics and in our government who are aware of that and are trying to be our heroes and really fight for the general population. So I have great respect for people going to politics, especially when we talk to our friend Danny. I'm so glad to know somebody like him personally, because you know that good people do get into politics. But I believe that there are two different factions within our government walls, the people that are there for power and money and are not looking out for the general population, and those that are true, what did Daniel say, peopleticians, that are true peopleticians, mm-hmm. and are there mm-hmm. to help the masses, to make a difference, to better things, to make sure that government spending is done appropriately and that we're not fighting made-up wars and things like that. So 9/11 stirs up a lot of different things within me that make me critical of our own government as a patriot, because I'm a very patriotic person. I love this country, and I love what America is all about, and I love the American people, because for the most part, we're a great people. So 9/11 always stirs up a lot in me because it's a much bigger picture for me than just what happened that day.
Well, and I believe, having talked to so many people about this through the years, that many people have the same opinion that you do, myself included. But the reason that doesn't discount what happened that day for me is because there still is a series of events, and if I don't recognize all of them, then I feel like there might be somebody sitting there listening. We have a few regular listeners who lost people in 911. So when I debated what we would talk about, I thought an accounting to give recognition to everyone that suffered loss that day was important for us to do. But I don't disagree with you, Shelley. You and I have talked about this privately. And, I mean, it's like, a bank robbery when somebody knows exactly what teller to go to and knows their way to the back, and somebody knows the combination, and somebody knows this, and somebody knows that. It's an inside job. So there is always that in this mix, but it still doesn't take away from the tragedy that took place that day. I really don't want to talk about the people that are responsible for this because I don't know. I know what we're being told, but you're right. We don't really know. And it's just like today, right this minute, on the news since 5 o'clock this morning, I've watched at least 7 times Obama say there is no safe haven for anybody who hurts the United States. And I posted on Facebook this morning myself, here again, 13 years later, another people has drawn the line in the sand again. And this will always happen because we are powerful. And there's always somebody struggling to be the king of the hill. And I don't know why, because there's plenty of hills. You could, millions of us could stand on our own hill every day and choose our own challenges and do the things that we know are right and be somebody and make a difference. Why somebody always has to pick who they think is the most powerful and try to knock them down, I never understood. I never get. There's plenty of room at the top for everybody. So to knock people off or over or down, it doesn't make sense to me. You know how strong we would be if we united? I mean, we would be magnificent as a worldwide unification. Imagine. We talk now every day about aliens and other planets. They must look at us and shake their heads and go, what the hell are they all thinking?
That's true. Yeah.
So
that's why, with all the, just kind of like on a humorous side note, because I do believe that we've been visited thousands of times over the millennia, and I just think there's too much evidence on Earth that we haven't been. And I think that's why they haven't come back and made themselves known, because we're still too unstable as a people, for God's sake.
Yeah.
I think, if you're talking about a superior race and they've been watching us, they're still waiting for us to have some sense of sensibility about us before they come and announce themselves, hey, we've been here before, and, that's where this came from, and that's where that came from, and that's how you know how to do this, because we left these little tidbits of knowledge for you, and you're... we've just been waiting for you to get your act together.
Well, and what's the deal with that, honey? I mean, seriously, what's the deal with that? Why don't we have our act together? Why don't we realize that it's not important you see this struggle between friends, you see this struggle in the workplace all the time. Because we all want to be recognized. But there's room for recognition on every level. I don't understand. I mean, I would never want to compete with somebody. This morning, Tom Brokaw is the guest on the Today Show. And because, Savannah had a baby and is out. So they've been choosing different newscasters and stars and stuff like that have filled in for her on the show. And it's been kind of fun because Tom Brokaw, he's been around for a very, very, very long time. You can't be starting out and think that you can compete with a Tom Brokaw as a for instance. The man mm-hmm. has seen, done, been everywhere.
Right.
Right? He's had one hell of a journey. And mind you, I don't know that he could do some of the things that you and I can do either. But what would be the point of not respecting him and letting him shine? Well, that's what I don't get.
Yeah,
you and I have been friends for a long time. When something good happens for you, I rejoice in that. I don't think, oh, geez, I got to figure out a way to get Shelley out of that seat right now because I deserve that seat.
Yeah. Well, right? It's true, and that's where people go when they see somebody else succeeding. It's sort of an analogy. I mean, it's sort of a comparison, but it's like when people hear somebody wins the lottery. And instead of getting excited for them, they get mad because why didn't they win the lottery, And it's instead of reveling in other people's successes and good fortune, a lot of times we get jealous that why didn't it happen for us, and that's such a destructive emotion and reaction.
Oh, my God. My eldest son and I just talked about this 2 days ago. He said, why do people, and I said, it's called the green-eyed monster, honey, and it's been around forever, forever, ever, ever. If you believe in the Bible, it happened between Adam and Eve. It happened since day one, whatever you believe in. If you believe in, we came from apes, they fought each other to be king of the hill until somebody walked up. I mean, it all depends on what you believe in, but it's been a constant battle. And I don't, now we should be adults now, right? I don't mean individually, but as a whole, the world, Earth, should be grown up now. We should be grown up, and we should be able to make room for other people with different gifts, different successes, different powers, different responsibilities. That's what I don't get. I just can't understand. I want other people to accept responsibilities. I want them to. I want them to be strong. I want them to be...
many pervasive influences out there, And I think because the pendulum swung from one direction to another, there was a time that parenting was way too strict and children were given no respect whatsoever and they were seen as property. I mean, children were actually given from one family to another to pay debts and things like that. I mean, there was a time when, when life was so much harder and women weren't respected and children weren't respected. So when you look at where we've come from, just in the last 100 years, there have been major, major improvements in the care and respect from person to person. Now there still is gender discrimination, there still is ethnic discrimination, but it's far less, and when it's noticed, it's recognized as something that's wrong, you know. But you see women in seats of power. You see children that are child prodigies that are out there in the public, you know. If there's child protection agencies, although they're not completely effective, but, I mean, there's things in place now where we recognize, no, this isn't the way to be. But we're still going through the growing pains of evolving through all those realizations, you know, that this isn't, you know, it's not right to discriminate against somebody, but we're still flushing that out because there's still a portion of our society that still does discriminate, you know. So we're still going through growing pains as a people, as a civilization, and there's so many different lifestyles, cultures throughout the world. And one of the things that we're trying to do on our show, which will help this problem, and there's a commercial, by the way, that I'm going to mention that kind of goes along with this, but when you become more culturally appreciative, and I don't like using the word tolerant because, you know, when you tolerate somebody, it means they're doing something wrong. But when you become culturally appreciative of the differences in people, that's when prejudices fall to the wayside. You know, I'm not talking about criminals. I'm talking about different cultures. When you appreciate different cultures and you don't fear them and you don't think that they're bad because they live differently than you, okay, that's when life starts becoming more fun and exciting and interesting. And there's a commercial by Rosetta Stone, which I love because it sounds like stuff that we talk about on the show, and it says, if every person just learned one other language, this world would become smaller, because lines of communication would improve and people would start understanding each other better. And it's a really wonderful commercial because you see people all over the world starting to talk to each other, you know, and then you hear the narrator in the background saying that.
Exactly. And I agree with all of that. And, of course, you know how I feel about that. And I even talk about my own shortcomings in regard to that because I am so programmed. Like we all are, I have to, like, have a conversation with Rini and say, you know, what are you thinking? Like the day with the woman that came to my house, and I was like, I was literally being unbelievably judgmental, and I'm ashamed of myself, but I admit it. I had to rethink everything, and then, of course, I fell in love with that person. God, I love her. So, you know, opening up like that is important. But, of course, you can't – that has to start on an individual level. It can't be worldwide. I get that. And a lot of people call me Pollyanna and tell me, you know, I still think that we can all get along. And for some people, they just crack up when I say that. They just look at me and shake their head like, oh, my God, how old are you again? And I say, I'm sorry. I'm not going to give up on that. Because if we really, really were so horribly different in our sentiment, not in our culture, not in the way we look, not in any of those things, but our actual emotional feelings, if we were really different, it would be another story. But we aren't. We all want the same thing. We all want to be happy and love and be loved and be successful and not have to worry about whether or not there's milk in the refrigerator. That's what we all want.
Well, see, I don't think that's Pollyanna at all because I feel the same way, and I also feel that it's attainable, that if it doesn't happen within my lifetime, because I expect to be here for quite a while yet, that I will at least see us going in a more aggressive, direction to that end of worldwide appreciation, cooperation, peaceful interactions with each other, war starting to either go away or diminish, fighting, that kind of thing. Because I think that, like I said, I really do believe that there has been influences here from outside of this planet, that there has been that there have been people that have been alien that have visited us. Like I said, I watched that show, Ancient Aliens, and there's just so much evidence. There's so much on this planet that with our major technology today, we've gone to the moon, and yet we cannot reproduce some of these structures that are literally all over the world. And they were built thousands of years ago, and some of them mapped the stars. How did anybody know how to map the stars 3,000 years ago? I mean, they were using, chisels and stuff like that. You know, so how did they make these huge structures, But when you think about that for a minute, even if you're somebody that doesn't believe that, think about it for a minute. If there are civilizations off this planet that have really mastered the technology that we're just coming in to learn about now, like wormholes and stuff like that, where they can travel light years in like a couple of seconds and they've been here and left, doesn't that really change things? Because then we're no longer Americans or Germans or Canadians or Africans. Now we're Earthlings, Wouldn't that kind of make people want to bond a little bit more all over the planet? Because now we're going to be dealing with something outside of ourselves that's greater than all of our little petty differences. And wars have been fought over petty differences, which is mind-boggling. The loss of life and limb and the tragedies and the horrors have many times been over petty differences. Or like you said before, somebody just trying to expand their empire instead of just allowing people to live and let live sort of concept.
Yeah. Well, and I want to real quick read a comment from one of our listeners. I agree with you, Renee and Shelley. People should be happy for others' success and gifts. I've never understood someone trying to drag someone else down. We should lift one another up, be happy for their blessings, and encourage them, and be sad for their hurts and disappointments, and comfort and encourage them in that also. Now, that's beautiful. That's from Donna Knight, who has talked on the show before, and she has an amazing insight, I think, to people and animals. She's an animal lover, and she tickles me sometimes with some of the stories she tells about her animals and about herself. But see, she sees that. She sees that, and she takes care of the elderly, which maybe that's a gift in itself, because you know, I always enjoyed being with the elderly myself and hearing their stories and their trials and tribulations. It taught me a lot. So thank you, Donna. I'm glad you agree with Shelley and I, and we just need more of us. We just need more of us, because I do think a good percentage of us want that for our world. But in order to achieve that, we have to let go of some of the, the inability to not be standing at the very top of the mountain. On September 11, 2001, 19 militants associated with the Islamic extremist group Al-Qaeda hijacked four airliners and carried out suicide attacks against targets in the United States. Two of the planes were flown into the towers of the World Trade Center in New York City. A third plane hit the Pentagon just outside Washington, D.C., and the fourth plane crashed into the field in Pennsylvania. Often referred to as 911, the attacks resulted in extensive death and destruction, triggering major U.S. initiatives to combat terrorism and defining the presidency of George W. Bush. Over 3,000 people were killed during the attacks in New York City and Washington, D.C., including more than 400 police officers and firefighters. On September 11, 2001, at 8:45 a.m., on a clear Tuesday morning, an American Airlines Boeing 767 loaded with 20,000 gallons of jet fuel crashed into the North Tower at the World Trade Center in New York City. The impact left a gaping, burning hole near the 80th floor of the 110-story skyscraper, instantly killing hundreds of people and trapping hundreds more in higher floors. As the evacuation of the tower and its twin got underway, television cameras broadcasted live images of what initially appeared to be a freak accident. I remember that. Then 18 minutes after the first plane hit, a second Boeing 767, United Airlines Flight 175, appeared out of the sky, turned sharply towards the World Trade Center, and sliced into the South Tower near the 60th floor. The collision caused a massive explosion that showered burning debris over surrounding buildings and streets below. America was under attack. The attackers were Islamic terrorists from Saudi Arabia and several other Arab nations, reportedly financed by Saudi fugitive Osama bin Laden's al-Qaeda terrorist organization. They were allegedly acting in retaliation for America's support of Israel, its involvement in the Persian Gulf War, and its continued military presence in the Middle East. Some of the terrorists had lived in the United States for more than a year and had taken flying lessons at an American commercial flight school. Others had slipped into the country in the months before September 11th and acted as the muscle in the operation. The 19 terrorists easily smuggled box cutters and knives through security at three East Coast airports and boarded four flights bound for California, chosen because the planes were loaded with fuel for the long transcontinental journey. Soon after takeoff, the terrorists commandeered the four planes and took the controls, transforming ordinary commuter jets into guided missiles. As millions watched the events unfolding in New York, American Airlines Flight 77 circled over downtown Washington, D.C., and slammed into the west side of the Pentagon, military headquarters at 9:45. Jet fuel from the Boeing 757 caused a devastating inferno that led to the structural collapse of a portion of the giant concrete building. All told, 125 military personnel and civilians were killed in the Pentagon, along with 64 people aboard the airliner. Less than 15 minutes after the terrorists struck the nerve center of the U.S. military, the horror in New York took a catastrophic turn for the worse when the South Tower of the World Trade Center collapsed in a massive cloud of dust and smoke. The structural steel of the skyscraper, built to withstand winds in excess of 200 miles per hour and a large conventional fire, could not withstand the tremendous heat generated from the burning jet fuel. At 10:30 a.m., the other Trade Center tower collapsed. Close to 3,000 people died in the World Trade Center and in its vicinity, including a staggering 343 firefighters and paramedics. 23 New York City police officers and 37 Port Authority police officers who were struggling to complete an evacuation of the buildings and save the office workers trapped on higher floors. Only six people in the World Trade Center towers at the time of their collapse survived. Almost 10,000 others were treated for injuries, many severe. Meanwhile, a fourth California-bound plane, United Flight 93, was hijacked about 40 minutes after leaving Newark International Airport in New Jersey. Because the plane had been delayed in taking off, passengers on board learned of events in New York and Washington by way of cell phone and air phone calls to the ground. Knowing that the aircraft was not returning to an airport, as the hijackers claimed, a group of passengers and flight attendants planned an insurrection. One of the passengers, Thomas Burnett Jr., told his wife over the phone that, "I know we're all going to die. There's three of us who are going to do something about it. I love you, honey." A another passenger, Todd Beamer, was heard saying, "Are you guys ready? Let's roll." Over an open line, Sandy Bradshaw, a flight attendant, called her husband and explained that she had slipped into a galley and was filling pitchers with boiling water. Her last words to him was, "Everyone's running to first class. Gotta go. Bye." The passengers fought the four hijackers and are suspected to have attacked the cockpit with a fire extinguisher. The plane then flipped over and sped towards the ground at upwards of 500 miles an hour, crashing in a rural field in western Pennsylvania at 10:10 a.m. All 45 people aboard were killed. Its intended target is not known, but theories include the White House, the U.S. Capitol, the Camp David presidential retreat in Maryland, or one of several nuclear power plants along the eastern seaboard. At 7 p.m., President George W. Bush, who had spent the day being shuttled around the country because of security concerns, returned to the White House. At 9 p.m., he delivered a televised address from the Oval Office declaring, "Terrorist attacks can shake the foundations of our biggest buildings, but they cannot touch the foundation of America." These acts shatter steel, but they cannot dent the steel of American resolve. In a reference to the eventual U.S. military response, he declared, "We will make no distinction between the terrorists who committed these acts and those who harbor them." Operation Enduring Freedom, the American-led international effort to oust the Taliban regime in Afghanistan and destroy Osama bin Laden's terrorist network based there, began on October 7th. Within 2 months, U.S. forces had effectively removed the Taliban from operational power, but the war continued as the United States and coalition forces attempted to defeat a Taliban insurgency campaign based in neighboring Pakistan. Osama bin Laden, the mastermind behind the September 11th attacks, remained at large until May 2nd, 2011, 10 years later, when he was finally tracked down and killed by U.S. forces at a hideout in Abbottabad, Pakistan. In June 2011, President Barack Obama announced the beginning of a large-scale troop withdrawals from Afghanistan, with a final withdrawal of U.S. forces tentatively scheduled for 2014. So, that was, like I said in the beginning of the show, that changed everything for all of us. Right? Everything. It didn't
I remember where I was that morning. I remember my reaction. And because I had just moved to Florida at that time, and I was working off-site for a company based in New York, so I worked from my home, so I had the TV on. And I was working on paperwork while the TV was on, and I was stunned. I didn't believe it at first. I didn't believe the coverage at first. But one of the things that I remember, because I kept watching it as the day went on, and I'm looking at these buildings, and I was like, they didn't fall over. It was a demolition. And I noticed looking at the building, and I remember thinking that day, I said, how did anybody get in there? How did these terrorists get in there? Because that takes a lot of work. How did any terrorist get in there to put the demolition? Because I had watched shows, interestingly enough, on demolishing buildings and the type of technology it takes and the type of intricacy, and that you have to go floor by floor by floor and put the detonators in specific spots. And I'm watching these buildings go down, and I realized that it was a demolition job. What upsets me is so many years later that our government, there's other people that are talking about it, people in the construction industry and that kind of stuff. They're saying the fuel could not have heated it. And I'm wondering why the U.S. government hasn't corrected the story 10 years later and why they're still putting this story out there. It's upsetting to me because anybody with any construction knowledge at all that looks at those old images knows that this was a demolition job. Now, if the terrorists did it, how did they get in those buildings to set that? That took a lot of time. So this is one of my problems with 9/11, and it frustrates me that there hasn't been a full-scale investigation as to what really happened that day, and that we keep putting this same story out over and over and over and over again when it's so obvious that there's a lot more that happened that day. Why isn't the fact that the planes did not knock these buildings over? They didn't collapse because the planes hit the top of them. They collapsed because it was a demolition job. I've watched these tapes over and over again, and you see the little puffs coming out on each floor, and you see the buildings fall straight down into their footprints. That would never happen if girders started bending. The thing would have come down like a pretzel. It never would have fell neatly into its own footprint. That's a demolition job. And that one fact alone haunts me, and I don't know why our government hasn't addressed that. If the terrorists are the ones who did this, and this was a demolition job, who did it, and how did they get access to the building? I can't believe that our government hasn't figured that out in all this time. So that's why I'm saying that there's a lot to the story that has not been released yet, and that's what it makes me sad. It makes me emotional because of the resolve of the American public. I think it caused a lot of hatred towards ethnic groups, that were similar to what the supposed terrorists were. That didn't have to happen. A lot of people that were good, abiding, loving American citizens that were from other ethnic backgrounds suffered both of what was put out about one. And I think that the story that situated has actually...
I've tried to bring Daniel in while you were talking, but he has interference on his line. Danny, I don't know whether you're driving with a window open or something like that, but I can't hear you because there's background noise. I think he wanted to say something, though, so I'll try again in a minute. Maybe it's just because they really don't have all the answers yet, Shell.
I don't believe that. Our government is too knowledgeable. They have ties in everywhere. They're withholding information for a reason, and it may be a good reason, all right? But the bottom line is the story that we're being told, the story that kids that weren't there are being told, is not accurate because there's a lot of facts that just didn't happen. The other thing is that no plane hit the Pentagon. When you look at the old footage there's no plane debris anywhere. I've watched it over and over and over again because when somebody said that to me, I said, well, that can't be. It was on the news. And every film clip, there's no fuselage. There's no parts of a plane anywhere. And if the plane went through the front of the Pentagon, then what happened to the wings? The wings would have had to slice through the front of the building. It's a big hole in the center of the Pentagon, like what would have happened with a big torpedo or something. You know? So it's like all these facts that are out there that have never been addressed. And to me, it makes me upset with our government because, you know, let's find out what really happened. You know, if there was somebody within our government that helped Al-Qaeda do this, flush it out. Let the American people know. We've dealt with worse than that, you know, but the bottom line is there's something more going on here, and I think it's treacherous to point the finger at one group when you have people from that same ethnicity within your own four walls, and I think it caused a lot of turmoil. And there were people of Arab descent in there that were actually killed within the United States after 9/11 because people blamed everybody that was of the same nationality as the terrorists. You know, and the aftermath caused a lot of other tragedies as a spinoff because of our panic and fear towards this supposed terrorist group. You know, how would people have reacted to that whole situation if they had realized that there were some corrupt people within our own government that cooperated with them or that actually set this up for self-serving purposes?
Right. I'm going to try to bring Danny in again because he's waiting patiently. Danny?
Hi, good morning.
Good morning, honey. Have you been listening to the show?
I have. I made the sign on at 8 o'clock. Got you guys around 8:30. Was that Shelley speaking?
Yes.
Yes, that was Shelley.
Okay. I'd first like to address that, and if I may, and then kind of give my take on a few things. And I'll tell you where I'm going to be this morning. Shelley, you know, there are things that that you've said that I agree with. We will never know the full truth, unfortunately, and I don't think it'll ever be released. There are some things I can tell you that probably the government has not figured out for themselves as yet. There is one, it is in my gut, and I guess it is my hope and my American belief that I would hope that our president at the time had nothing to do with that. I was very proud as a proud Democrat, very proud about our president, and a lot of people were not. But I was very proud of George W. Bush when he was sitting there reading to those children at that school, that when he was told twice, whispered in his ear what was going on, he didn't immediately jump up. As the President of the United States, you can't do that. Yes, your country needs you, but you're in front of children. What does that show for our children? I was very, 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 very pleased that his staff kept him updated immediately, as they are supposed to do. And then immediately after he left, he took that opportunity upon to be brief and made sure he made the calls that he needed to make to find out what was going to be done. I can tell you this. It is my belief that there was someone in our government in a higher level that was involved. That is my true belief, and unfortunately we never know why this happened, because so many American lives were lost, and that should never have to happen to cover up something. That should never have to happen for us to be able to hide something. So that's just my personal statement on that. I can tell you that this morning I will be heading to Broward County 9/11 Memorial Service. Broward Sheriff Scott Israel and his staff will be hosting a signature grant, a memorial service from 10:30 to 11:30. So those that are located in Broward County, we are not turning anyone away. Anyone is welcome. It is a free event honoring those lives that were lost, our firefighters and police officers, our men in service, women that serve this country every day. Many of us, actually, no, I would state that all of us remember where we were on that day. I can tell you that I was in fifth grade, and it seems so long ago because I feel like I'm grown up much more from that time.
Yeah.
I didn't even know what the Twin Towers were. I had no idea what the World Trade Center was, and until that day, until I learned what they were, why it was so important. I can tell you that I remember students, my peers being picked up. I was the last one there, and eventually the school said, no, we're stopping our parents from picking everybody up. You know, the scare in South Florida was we have very, very important businesses and trade buildings in Miami and Fort Lauderdale, and they were scared that something would happen here.
Danny?
Yes.
Danny, how old were you then?
I was in fifth grade. So
were you 10 or 11?
Oliver and I, 8 is third grade, 9 is, I probably was 10, 11 years old.
Yeah.
So it's been about,
it's been 13 years.
I was 11, it's been 15 years, yeah. So it's amazing, you know, because when I look at when I look at when I was a kid and how that just made such an impact on me now, or then, I look at how much more I've been impacted in what I've done, and to make sure that I just, you know, as an American, that should never happen again. I posted on my Facebook this morning, and I want to share this with everyone, something I wrote called Just for Tomorrow. And I want to explain why I use the word tomorrow. Tomorrow means we always look forward. And if we're always looking towards tomorrow, then we're kind of always planning for that time. But we're never really in that. We don't, you know, the future is every minute from now that I see. I don't know what's going to happen the next minute. I don't know what's going to happen tomorrow. But I know if I'm going to wake up, I'm going to be respectful of others, and I love everybody tomorrow, then as long as I love them today, and I continue to do that, and look to do the same thing tomorrow, then love should endure forever. Or we should never forget what happened. If we allow ourselves to, just for tomorrow, not today, but tomorrow, put aside odds and grudges, if we put aside the disrespect and hurtful words, instead, if we hug and share in the unity that we share as humans and not humanity, then we will never forget, and it will never happen again. And that is my belief, and I will always look towards tomorrow, not to today. And, I'll tell you all that I love you all. As an American, I share this day with you all, and I'm getting ready to go to that service. I'd like to welcome everybody in Broward County listening. And there are plenty of other memorial events around the state, the country. So if you're not in Broward, please, please, if you're able to get off work and attend one, I know those people that were touched, not just as an American, but really were personally touched, would appreciate you there. And this is the one day that we always remember, and that we always, at least, if not tomorrow, come together. So I'm going to be heading to this service. Again, it's the signature grand from 10:30 to 11:30. No one will be turned away from this service, and we're welcoming everybody. So,
well, thank you, honey, and I agree with you. Tomorrow is another opportunity, always, and looking to tomorrow is important for all of us.
Yes.
Right now, as we speak, and I'm gonna be quiet for a moment because they're remembering the first attack at this moment in the White House and
yes.
all over
yes.
the world. So we're going to be quiet for a few minutes. Thank you, Danny,
yes.
for sharing with us, and enjoy the service. Bye-bye, sweetie. Okay, that was beautiful. That was the president and Michelle and the vice president that came out and shared that moment of silence. And the White House lawn is packed. Lots of sad faces, lots of flowing tears. It's certainly. Certainly a tough day for a lot of people. So, what do you think of what Danny said? What do you think of what he wrote?
Oh, I think it was beautiful. I mean, he really mm-hmm. does have a very unique blend of political savvy and ethical heart, for lack of a better way of putting it. He really does care for people, and he wants to make a difference. And because he's an insider, because he understands how government works, he's really in a position to be able to do that. So I really hope that his political career takes off, that people recognize how genuine and ethical he is, and that he is really driven to just make massive contributions to his constituents and to influence other politicians in other areas to do the same. So I'm always impressed with how he talks about stuff. He has got just a very, very genuine heart, and I have a lot of respect for him, like I said, not only for his heart, but for also his political savvy.
Well, and he legitimately wants to make a difference. And
right.
I, the only fear I have is that I think a lot of young people like our Daniel start out like that. The real test is if they can maintain that care and that respect for other people's point of view and other people's lifestyles, all of the above. He does have the kind of background, though, that gives him an insight that I would say a lot of people don't have. Although if you it made me laugh the other day, and now you're saying this reminds me of it. I was watching, I don't know, one of the incumbents talking about, oh, I remember when my mom did this, and we hung the clothes out on the line and all this kind of stuff. And I thought to myself, that's what everybody did back then. I mean, you know, everybody hung their clothes out on the line when I was a kid, too. Very few homes had a dryer. As a matter of fact, when I was very young, only people that, you know, were pretty well off had a TV.
Right.
Forget a dryer. You know, you went without a dryer because that was one of those rich people commodities. But I was watching that, and I thought to myself, you know, he thinks that puts him in touch with all of us. And I, honestly, does anybody care about that anymore? Because
yeah,
that's
right.
Not the problem today. That's really not the problem today. What I really want to know is that you still care, that you still want to make a difference, and you still strive to make a difference that is for everyone, not just for someone's, you know. That's
right.
I think that's where they miss something. And, of course, I hope Danny keeps that, maybe with people like Shelley and I in his life to remind him all the time that that's why he started out. Maybe we have that chance to, you know, to help him make that kind of difference. So I did want to, we'll end this conversation about 911 now, only because we have a few minutes left, and I wanted to let everybody know that on Friday morning, we're going to have a gentleman that I met, and I've talked about him a couple times, and he talks about a moment of silence in the schools, and I mentioned him yesterday. He will be on the show Friday morning. Please don't miss it. His name is Abraham Frank, and he's the director of this organization that has started in the New York, New Jersey area, but he's been traveling all over and has been able to make a significant difference in the way young people think. And I, because of things that I learned myself about silence, I always thought it was really important to express yourself, and I still do. I still think it's very important to express yourself and to not keep things bottled up inside. But I also now see the worth of sometimes just shutting up. And for somebody like me, that's not always easy. But I do, you know, I do see the worth of it now. And I do, we talk all the time about hearing other people and listening and really letting other people's thoughts register so that you get some worth out of their thoughts. And when you're talking about a child, I mean, children are made to be quiet all the time and listen, right? I mean, that's how you teach them. Now listen to me. I mean, if I had a dime for every time I've said it, one of my kids, look at me and listen to me when I'm talking to you. Still, Spike's 46. And if I think he's not listening to me, I say, look at me when I'm talking to you. And he'll go, Mom. And I'll say, I want to make sure you're hearing what I'm saying to you. And I certainly do that with grandchildren. Yesterday, my grandson's girlfriend is babysitting this absolutely adorable little precocious girl. Her name is Allie. And she called me and says, Grandma, are you home? And I said, yes. She says, can I bring Allie over to meet you? And I said, sure. So in comes this adorable little girl. And she wants my jewelry, so I gave her one of my bracelets that she wore around the house. And then I gave her a teddy bear that was in my bedroom. And she stood in the middle of the floor and danced with the teddy bear and rocked the teddy bear. It was so much fun to meet her for the first time. And she can't really talk yet, right? But everything she said, she gave sign language with, so you knew what she was saying. And I thought to myself, it was like she's going, ugh, ugh. And I'm thinking to myself, what is ugh? And she comes over and puts her little arm around my neck. And I was like, oh, my gosh, ugh is hug. Ugh is hug, right? So there's something to be learned. I guess the reason I bring this up is there's something to be learned from everybody if you shut up and listen. So it is important. It is important, and I'm excited to have him talk. He's right on our wavelength, Shell. You'll like him.
You know what I find interesting?
He's a lot like Izzy.
Because I know we're almost out of time, but Kevin Trudeau is one of my favorite lecturers. Used to talk all the time. In fact, I actually have one of his lectures on CD where he talks about exactly what we're saying here, listening to the other person. He said so many times, he said people are agreeing with each other, but because they're seeing something from a different vantage point, either because of their personal history or something, he says a lot of times people are actually saying the same thing, but because they're saying it from a slightly different perspective, the other person doesn't understand. They dig their heels in and they say, no, we got to do it this way. And he says, and if people would just slow down, listen to the other person, and really take the time to understand what they were saying, he said more times than not, you would realize that you were both on the same page, and then you could move forward by fine-tuning your each individual, perceptions so that you could come to a center ground that was better. And he said he used to do this all the time in business meetings where these people would be at each other's throats, and he would say, stop for a minute. He says, explain yourself again, and you don't say anything. And then in a few minutes they would say, well, that's what I've been trying to say. But because their perceptions were different, they didn't realize that the other person was actually agreeing with them all along, and all this arguing and everything was for naught because people, they don't understand how inefficient our English language is or any language is. You have to take the time to understand where somebody is coming from, and instead of instantly taking the stance that they're disagreeing with you, ask them questions. Get to the finer point of what they're trying to say before you instantly dig your heels in and go into defense mode, because a lot of times people are more on the page with you than you think.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And I couldn't agree more with that. And I think, and that is an issue with all of us, especially, the older we get. And we're kind of like cut to the chase all the time, I mean, that's my middle name, I don't need to. How many times have you written something and I've said, Shelley, take out about 1,000 of those words when we were working together, especially business stuff, I'd say, no, you don't need to tell them all this, because they won't read it all. I worry that people don't pay attention to things. I tend to be pretty short and sweet. I remember even in school, write an essay, and I'd say what I wanted to say and be done. And the teacher would say, can't you expound on this a little bit? I'd say, yeah, but it'll be redundant. I mean, It is what it is. This is it in a nutshell, right? So, but I think listening is imperative, and I think a few minutes of silence is a great, great thing. So I want to wish everybody a great day, and I hope your sadness today for 911 isn't overwhelming for you today. It's been a long time, but I know some things never go away. So I hope your day is smooth sailing. And we'll be back tomorrow with Abraham Frank. I look forward to interviewing him and hearing his story. So everybody go out and have a great day, though. God bless. Bye, Shel. Talk to you tomorrow, honey.
Bye, Renee. God bless everyone who has any memories of 9/11 or suffered any loss, personal or otherwise. My condolences and my heart and my prayers go out to all the police and the firefighters that were injured that day. And God bless everyone who was either there or has any memories whatsoever of 9/11. We're a strong country, and God bless America as well.
Yeah. Amen. Bye-bye.